From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. A high-profile lawsuit challenging a key part of Alaska's homeschool system moved ahead this week after an Anchorage judge denied a motion to dismiss the case. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
The lawsuit centers on what are known as correspondence school allotments. Those are cash payments to families who homeschool their kids in the state's public correspondence school system. They're meant to pay for things like lessons and supplies. Some parents also use them to pay for private school tuition. A group of parents sued the state in 2023, saying the use of allotments on private school tuition violates the state constitution. Article 7 bars state spending, quote, for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution. At first, a judge ruled the whole allotment system was unconstitutional. That was later reversed by the state Supreme Court, which sent it back to a lower court for a closer look at how school districts allow allotments to be spent. Then, earlier this year, a group of correspondent school parents represented by the legal nonprofit Institute for Justice asked the lower court judge to dismiss the case. They argued allotments are a direct benefit to correspondent school families, not private schools. But in an 8-page order on Monday, Superior Court Judge Laura Hartz disagreed. She said the Supreme Court's decision requires a review of how allotments are actually spent in practice. The plaintiffs, the state, and the school districts added to the case following the Supreme Court ruling all argued against dismissing the case and said a final ruling would require more evidence. The ruling moves the case into the discovery phase, where attorneys for the parties will exchange evidence as they build a case for a possible trial. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
The Juneau Assembly is considering offering a portion of the future Telephone Hill redevelopment to house U.S. Coast Guard families moving to Juneau. The city expects more than 100 families to join the community when a U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker homeports in the coming years. At a committee meeting Monday night, City Manager Katie Kester said both the city-owned Telephone Hill and Peterson Hill subdivisions could meet the U.S. Coast Guard's housing needs.
We have been meeting with Coast Guard leadership and Coast Guard staff here on what their needs are for homeporting the stories, knowing that housing is a major obstacle and that there's a high priority for the community to bring that ship home.
The Coast Guard announced last summer that Juneau would be the home port for the new polar icebreaker Storis. The 360-foot ship is built to operate in the Arctic and is meant to increase U.S. presence in the region. Coast Guard officials say it will likely be a few more years before the ship is officially homeported in Juneau, but it will bring in at least 110 personnel and their families to town. Kester says Juneau's housing stock is not enough to take care of its current housing needs. The crisis will only be exacerbated once Coast Guard families begin to arrive. She suggested that the Assembly look to sign an agreement with the U.S. Coast Guard that a portion of the housing at the Telephone Hill and Peterson Hill subdivisions would go to its personnel. She says that would make the land more attractive to developers. The historic Telephone Hill neighborhood downtown is slated to be demolished beginning in December. Renters are still living there and have until November 1st to move out. The plans open up the area for newer, denser housing in response to the city's housing crunch. The city does not yet have a developer signed onto the project.
Telephone Hill has an opportunity to provide a lot of multi-unit housing that's really conveniently located across from the subport. So for those service members that maybe don't have a car, maybe they're single, close to public transportation, close to work, it could provide a really attractive option.
Peterson Hill is about 26 acres of city-owned land, half a mile past Brotherhood Bridge on Glacier Highway. In 2017, the Juneau Assembly approved developing the 86-lot subdivision to create more housing. Since then, private developers and individuals have bought some of the lots to build single-family homes. Clinkett and Haida Regional Housing Authority is also working on developing housing on a portion of the land. The Assembly voted to direct Kester to work on creating a memorandum of understanding to potentially offer land at Peterson Hill and Telephone Hill for private developers to build Coast Guard housing. And yesterday was Orange Shirt Day, a day of remembrance for Indigenous children who were separated from their language, families, and culture and sent to residential schools across North America from the late 1800s well into the 20th century. In Juneau, a gathering focused on healing and togetherness. At the Zach Gordon Youth Center, people wore orange shirts and came together to educate young people about the history of residential schools and to celebrate Alaska Native languages and cultures that thrive in spite of that history. There's drumming, dancing, and singing, and tables with crafts like beading or tea making. Hanuk Gum Godam Sol Naomi Lisk stands at a table with a bowl of medicine, Labrador tea, which is called Tz'ik Shaltin in Tlingit. Lisk is with Hatush Lachish Coalition, a local nonprofit focused on healing. She said 26 members of her family were taken to the first and one of the most notorious residential schools in the United States, Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania. It's part of her family's history.
That's where my grandma's uncle escaped. That's over 3,000 miles away. He ran and he ran and he ran and he ran. And when he made it back to British Columbia, they hid him away at Grease Camp.
Akquan elder Sikuni Fran Houston said her mother went to the Wrangell Institute as a child. It was a boarding school in Wrangell intended to assimilate Alaskan Native children into white culture. Years later, her family learned more about her time there.
We looked at my mother's report card. You know what was on there? It had nothing to do with reading, writing, arithmetic, science, history, none of that. It was sewing, cleaning, cooking, washing clothes, being a housemaid. And if she didn't do that, she got punished. Speaking her language, she got punished.
Houston said she asked her mother for years why she didn't teach her the Tlingit language. Her mother told her she didn't want Houston to experience the violence that she did at school. And as Hichle'ish Lyle James prepared to lead a song with his drum in his hand, he said not every child made it back home. Many died at these schools from abuse and neglect, and the government lied to their families.
We know that there were many families who were told that their kids ran away. We don't know what happened to them. They disappeared. But in reality, they had passed away, and they didn't tell the truth.
James said Indigenous families are left with the loss of loved ones, and that can't be fixed. But gatherings like this, he said, help with building a path toward healing.
We're not forgetting where they're at, that their memory doesn't leave when they disappear. So Taskel Yahaya, it's going to multiply like sand. Every time we sing, every time we talk about our history.
And as Leesk said, those efforts to erase language and culture didn't work. They're still singing. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. And the fishing industry is one of the largest economic drivers in Alaska. It directly employs nearly 60,000 people and produces more than $5 billion in economic activity every year. At Southeast Alaska's annual economic conference that took place in Sitka in mid-September, industry leaders talked about the importance of modernizing the industry to help ensure economic resilience and sustainability. KCAW's Hope McKenney reports.
Southeast Alaska has thousands of resident fishermen who depend on access to salmon and other species, from trollers to gillnetters, seiners, sport, charter, and subsistence fishermen. During a panel discussion at Southeast Conference entitled Modernizing for a Vibrant Future, Linda Benkin, executive director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, or ALFA, reminded listeners of the value of the seafood industry to the region.
Because so much of what fishermen do happens on the periphery of most people's world, out on the ocean, down on the waterfront, that it often gets missed. So I just wanted to remind people, there's over $1 billion annual economic impact from the seafood industry in Southeast Alaska. There's 8,000 jobs generated by the seafood industry. Salmon alone, 1 in 10 people in Southeast are earning some role of their living from the salmon fisheries.
Starting in 2023, Alaska seafood experienced an economic downturn due to geopolitics, inflation, softening demand, and global competition, particularly from Russia. In response, the U.S. banned imports of seafood from Russia. Then earlier this year, President Donald Trump issued an executive order that he said would restore American seafood competitiveness. With the unpredictability of the industry, panelists at the conference said one way to weather the storm is modernization. Julie Decker is president of the seafood trade group Pacific Seafood Processors Association. She said modernization for the seafood industry is more than just about technology.
It's really about modernizing our fisheries management and our social structures and systems, marketing, community resilience, product development, and policy. So a lot of different areas are connected to modernization when we think about that term.
Organizations like ALFA, where Benkin works, are approaching modernizing from all those angles. When COVID hit in 2020, they started a seafood distribution program, first locally, then regionally, and then statewide, as they started hearing from people saying they needed seafood. They're currently working on implementing artificial intelligence into electronic monitoring programs for sablefish and halibut fisheries to improve efficiency and cost. And they're launching the first hybrid commercial fishing boats in the state starting this fall. Doug Vincent Lang is commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He said Alaska is recognized for science-based fisheries management. But he said there are a number of steps needed to update tools and regulatory systems to continue responsible management in a world that's rapidly changing. He said those steps include continuing fish surveys, developing fair and equitable seafood certification processes, and pushing for faster delivery of disaster funds for fishermen, among others.
And if we do all this stuff right, and we have a shared vision and we implement it, our fisheries are going to remain strong. And I can tell you, hopefully we're all going to be sitting around the table eating miso black cod and having a dram of kelp vodka in the future.
Bankin from Alpha said 99% of the seafood that's harvested in Alaska leaves Alaska. It's about keeping Alaska's fisheries strong and resilient.
I think of thriving communities here in Southeast and across the state of Alaska where our children's children can make a healthy living from fisheries, seafood, or the broader blue economy.
And she said she would love other countries to be able to look to Alaska as an example of sustainability and stewardship. In Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 56 degrees and sunny this afternoon. Tonight, there's a low of 35, quite chilly. Rain is likely to pick up tomorrow in the afternoon. And it looks like Friday and Saturday could be rainy as well, with temperatures in the mid-40s to low 50s. This has been a news update from KTOO.